Just a reminder that you can watch Keeneland's racing from any location and bet directly from your phone with Keeneland Select. Keeneland Select is offering a lucrative promotion for new signups this month. Sign up for a new account with Keeneland Select and receive a special $100 back after you wager $200 on Keeneland Racing this April. This is on top of Keeneland Select's lucrative sign-up bonus that will earn you $100 after you wager $300 in the first 30 days. Sign up today and tell your friends, KeenelandSelect.com. Make sure you use the promo code ITM21. That promo code, once again, ITM21. And welcome to the In the Money Players Podcast. This is our show for Monday, April 5th. I am your host, Peter Thomas Fornatale, back with you in the Brooklyn Bunker once again after a whirlwind weekend in Keeneland. We'll talk about that a little later. We're going to talk about all the racing from the weekend a little bit later, but we're going to start off with some other news about exciting things happening in Kentucky. And to do that with me, we are bringing in regular guests to the program from the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation, the first lady of the In the Money Players Podcast family, Kim Weir. Kim, how are you?
I am just grinning ear to ear, my friend Pete, and greetings from Louisville, Kentucky. It is fun to talk to you from a different location for the first time in 14 months.
Amazing. It was great getting to see you, albeit briefly, for a cup of coffee in Lexington, talking about everything going on, enjoying the beautiful spring weather. But I'll just ask it this way. What brings you to Kentucky at this lovely time of year? What do you got cooking down there that the listeners need to know about?
Oh my gosh. Well, yes, it is spring in Kentucky and the babies are dropping and the horses are running. And we have huge news on behalf of the herd of the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation. Tomorrow, that would be April 6th, we will be launching to the world a brand new, amazing farm in Louisville. It is the TRF Sanctuary Farm at Chestnut Hall. And it is game-changing, so exciting, so beautiful, and such a gift that we get to share with you, Pete, with all of your listeners, with the Louisville community, with the racing public, and the world. So how's that for a lead?
That's a fantastic lead. How long has this been in the works? How is this farm going to fit in to the existing array of farms that the TRF has around the country?
Yeah, well, lots to share. And tomorrow is the release. So I'm going to tell your audience everything except a couple key details.
That's
so
cool. We understand. Tomorrow. And we'll send that around, you know, on Twitter.
Yeah, yep.
Folks who follow me at Looms Boldly can get that. For some reason, you've disappeared from Twitter personally, but the TRF handle is there as well. What's that so people can follow it?
Yes, that is TRF Inc.
Gotcha. At TRF Inc., another way to follow. But tell us what you can for now.
Yeah, I can tell a lot and still leave some good juicy stuff for tomorrow. So this is an extraordinary gift that the TRF, the horses of the TRF, have been given by an individual. And it just proves that everyone has gifts to give, and it's all about thinking about what they are. But there's an individual in the Louisville community who has created this farm. So this farm is called Chestnut Hall. It's about 30 acres in Prospect, Kentucky, which is very beautiful, and about 30 minutes door to door from Churchill Downs to our farm for all your listeners who might be coming this way at some point. So it is a farm that has been refurbished, brought back to its glory of as an historic horse farm, but it's been neglected for decades and has just been brought back to its glory as a place for horses to live happily ever after. We were approached by this individual last fall, and it was about the time that you and I, Pete, were up to our eyeballs in our TRF Blackburn Horse Show. I dare say that all that good energy in the world may have had an influence on this happening. I'm not sure it was direct tie, but there's something connecting there. So we were approached by this individual saying that this farm had been prepared with one purpose, which was to bring thoroughbred horses to the Louisville community and to make them accessible to the public, to help the neighborhoods, the community of Louisville, and much beyond, to connect them to horses, to let them see the horses, feel the horses, understand and learn about the horses. So they wanted a charity to be the resident at this farm. How lucky were we to be sought out for this opportunity? Because our horses do many, many magical things, but the thing they do best of all is to inspire the love of the people who meet them. So our horses on this farm will be a TRF sanctuary farm, which is the model that you and I talk about the least, frankly, in these, you know, to date, we've talked a little bit less about it on our podcast, because a sanctuary farm is a horse living out its life in sheer, pure horse happiness. There isn't the TRF second chances element. They are not living in prisons. They're, in this case, they're living at a horse farm. But in doing that, we're showing them in their sort of raw beauty, and we're making them available, in this case, to educate about racing, to educate about horses. And so this farm is unlike anything else we have, because it is a sanctuary farm, and we have many of those. We have about 11 of those across the country in private farms all across the nation. But we've never, ever had one with the specific intent of opening the doors and bringing the public in. That's the magic of this farm. Yeah. So,
and especially given the location, right? I mean, people who don't know, Louisville, a lot of very urban environment there. It's not like other parts of Kentucky where people are going to be able to get to see horses all the time. The opportunity for people from an inner city environment to get out and see what racing is all about, see what horses are all about, and also to get an inkling of the work that the TRF does, how much people in racing love horses, that they invest to have them be able to live out their lives in this environment. I think you're touching on a lot of things that are really important to highlight for the sport on a broader basis.
Well, that you've nailed it. And that's where it is. The sky is the limit with this. It's a platform that we've never had, a place where our horses are visible. And of course, it's not that there are not horse farms where horses are visible. And aftercare brethren of ours that we love, including our very, very dear friends at Old Friends, their farm is in Lexington. And our farm is in Louisville. We want to put horses in as many places as we can across the country to give people that access. So this is just one more jumping off point for conversations to begin, for education to happen. And you're absolutely right. It's the mixing of horses with people who know that their town here in Louisville is globally renowned for horse racing, but who on a day-to-day basis have almost no way to connect with those horses. Well, that, as of tomorrow, is changing.
That's great. That's so cool. Oh. What can people do to support? What can people do to get when will this be open? When can people start booking a chance for them to come and see the operation? Because it's obviously part of this is that it's open to the public. Give us a couple of action steps here. I know you got a crazy day. I don't want to keep you too long.
Oh, no.
But I did want to help get this news out there, because I know we got a lot of people in the audience who care deeply about it and support the TRF and like to hear everything you got going on.
Yeah, well, thank you. Well, the good news is that as of tomorrow, go to our website, trfinc.org, and it'll be right there on the homepage. So you can go see the farm. It is called the TRF Sanctuary Farm at Chestnut Hall. So the first action is just follow you on Twitter and click the link tomorrow. But fortunately, that will not be the end, because the farm will become available for public tours mid-May. We're going to get through, you know, Derby craziness and our launch. But as of mid-May, a beautiful time all summer long, the farm will be available for public tours, and that will be readily available. We are also booking individual VIP visits, which I'm dying to get you here, Pete. I'm actually hoping that maybe you and I, we won't do the production meeting on the fly, but there could be in the money players podcast event during Derby week, even like that.
I love that
idea. Realm
of
possibility.
And I'll tell you what, we've got some people, I think, who qualify for that VIP status based on past gifts to the TRF. Let me just say this. If you're going to be in and around Louisville for Derby week and are looking for something additional to do, I don't, you know, we're making this up on the fly, so we don't have a date yet, but just if you're generally interested in that idea, feel free to reach out to me and I'll put together a little list. We might not be able to accommodate everybody. Obviously it's going to be a limited thing, but why not test the waters? You know, we're all about the production meeting in the middle of the show here, Kim.
I've listened to you do it many a time with JK, so I know. But just rest assured that there will be many, many opportunities, because really the mandate, it's a wonderful mandate. We are given this gift. This is a tremendous gift we've been given on behalf of the horses, but we are given it with a clear stipulation that we must share our horses with as many people as we can. And what a wonderful challenge that is. So whether it be a cocktail party on the porch looking at our horses, there's a beautiful historic home on this property. So hint, hint, there's lots of party opportunities, but there are going to be ways for us to bring community groups, children's groups. I'm looking to build some pony club bridges to do education. So the sky's the limit. And boy, you will be hearing more about it, my friend. And all of your listeners can just stay tuned for more.
I love it. But while we have you, Kim, this is a secondary announcement to the other announcement. I was considering saving it, but I think we should just another production meeting in the middle of the show. I think we should just go for it and let folks know who are thinking about donating to the TRF this year. We've got an incentive. We're going to do the second year of the In the Money whiskey with our partners up there at Albany Distilling Company. This has been a project that's been in the works. I've been up there tasting barrels and things. Last year, we did the malt whiskey. This year, we're going to do something different. And this is a spirit. It's not unique. Another New York distiller has done this and done a pretty fine job of it, actually. Our friends at New York Distilling Company did a similar model. But this is going to be our version of an Empire Rye, which is the name for the distinction for New York State grown rye aged a certain amount. In this case, I think just over 3 years. And then we're finishing it in an apple brandy barrel. So it's been hanging out. Yeah, I went up and tasted it early on. It's gotten a few more weeks now in the apple brandy barrel. They're going to be ready to send out right around Derby. Ooh. If you're interested in getting your new bottle, this is the perfect time to make a donation to the TRF. We're going to ask for donations of $200 to get a bottle that will include your shipping. TRFinc.org/players. We've got to give us a minute to get the all the official information about it up there. But just know, if you make a $200 donation as of this week, mention the whiskey, please, in there, and we'll make sure to get you this. We're going to have a label finalized soon, all this other stuff. The whiskey itself will be ready end of the month, but we really want to encourage folks to get going and get giving. And that's a pretty nice little incentive. The malt whiskey flew. We weren't even able to get the bottles to everybody who wanted them. So we're doing a little more of this rye in the apple brandy. I mean, it's delicious. It's a cocktail in a bottle. So happy with how it's tasting.
It sounds so good. Is it bad that it sounds good at 10 o'clock on a Monday morning?
No, not in the midst of all the work that we've been doing. That is completely acceptable. TRFinc.org/players. Please, that's the minimum to get the bottle, but you know, give generously. This is amazing work that Kim and the TRF continue to do. And I love this next step, this idea of the sanctuary farm with a public tour element so near to a major city. Nothing like this has ever been done before. I mean, Old Friends, absolutely phenomenal, but that's Lexington, that's in horse country. Everybody, the people around there get to see horses all the time. We're talking about, you know, Louisville, a totally different kind of city, being able to give these folks access to racing. I think a lot of good is going to come out of this endeavor, and we should do what we can to support it. That's my thought anyway. Kim, any other closing thoughts before I let you get on with your Monday?
I would just say I love it. I'm so excited. I think this will give us a chance to meet so many of your wonderful listeners and to give them that horse connection. So it is good. It's a good time to be in Kentucky. It's a good time to love horses and to love horse racing. And I can't wait to hear all your debrief on the big weekend here at Keeneland. So thank you, Pete. This is so much fun.
Thank you, Kim. And speaking of that debrief, it's coming up right now. Now I'd like to welcome in the usual co-host of this program. He is not on the planet Texas. He is still in Las Vegas, where we spent the weekend together. First time we got to hang out for a weekend other than the Breeders' Cup in quite some time. Talking, of course, about the People's Champion, Jonathan Kitchen. What's up, my man?
PTF, you dropped a little bit there for me. I don't know if you did for everyone else, but I'm good. My voice is in pain a little bit for about, I don't know, 3/16 of a mile. I was screaming Javi as loud as I possibly could. So I think I'm a little bit hurt in that department, but I'll be all right. Everybody's good, happy, and the Philly ran well.
Philly ran very well. Passed the champagne, the filly in question. We'll get to her. We'll get to all this three-year-old action. I'm looking at my waveform. It looks clean, JK. Sounds like you're having some Wi-Fi issues this morning. I'll let you know if it becomes an issue. But what's going on over there? I thought you usually get a pretty good setup, and now you're back to dodgy hotel Wi-Fi, it seems.
Yeah, I don't know. On mine, it shows you that you dropped for a second and a half, but who knows? It's a interesting world we live in, isn't it?
This program records everything like independently. So as long as it's good on the master, since I'm not going to put you to work post-producing the show. Tempting though that is, I think we'll be all right. I think you've already answered the question. I was going to ask you to lead off with the most memorable race from the weekend from you personally. Well, we're going to obviously touch on all the three-year-old colts, but why don't we start with the three-year-old fillies and this year's Ashland. Tell us what you saw.
Yeah, I mean, we saw a really good horse in Malathot get the job done off of a long layoff to remain undefeated. Obviously, she's bred. You can't really be bred any better than she is with her pedigree. And you know, when you get run down by Todd Pletcher and Joel Rosario, who decided to basically win every stake at Keeneland this weekend, you know, there's not a whole lot to be upset about. You know, and so as far as Malathot, I mean, I'm convinced that the winner of the Kentucky Derby and the Kentucky Oaks ran at Keeneland on Saturday.
Oh, interesting.
Whether it's Malathot, whether it's Pass the Champagne, and I obviously we'll get to Essential Quality. So, you know, Malathot ran really well. Now, where the focus obviously was with Pass the Champagne. She broke just a taste slow. I don't think it really cost her anything in the long run, but it, when you lose by a nose, you look at any part of the race.
That's interesting. I did think it cost her. So I'm curious to hear your thought on it. Then I'll give you mine.
Yeah. I mean, like, right. Hindsight's 2020, but if you want to say that her breaking a step slow cost her, then you have to say, but then you can't ignore the fact that Malathot went 40 feet further than her. You can't, you can't just, yeah. You can't
well,
be
I,
one.
I wasn't saying it made me like her better than Malathot going forward. I just, it started a series of events for me where I don't think Javier Castellano made any mistake, but I felt like that started a series of events that led him having to aggressively move on her when he did in a way that was absolutely the right thing strategically. But at the end of the day, it just felt like that other horse just had a little bit too much for her in the lane. But it gave me some hope. On one level, it gave me some hope that with a more pleasing trip, maybe Pass the Champagne could turn the tables. Though I will also add my paddock note was it looked to me like Malathot, I don't want to say she was short of fitness. She looked great, but she didn't look like fully cranked to me, to my eye. It felt like a race she should move up after. I mean, I think Malathot really justified her position as the favorite for the Kentucky Oaks, and I feel like Pass the Champagne is a really interesting long shot who you can tell a tale about.
Yeah, I think Pass the Champagne will be single digits. You know, Travel Column and Malathot obviously take a majority of the money. I'd imagine Crazy Beautiful will take a little bit of money as well. But from a speed figure standpoint, you know, I think that this race will draw some attention. No, I mean, when you look at a situation like this where you lose by a nose in a grade one, and it was obviously a huge race for everyone involved, you know, you start wanting to kind of figure out where things went wrong or went right. And she just kind of got beat to me, you know, and like there wasn't a whole lot there. Some might want to argue that Javier moved a little bit early. I think I have a couple of thoughts about that. One is that our minds and our vision visually where he moved in a normal race, maybe we would have thought that was a little bit early, but in a short stretch, mile and a 16th, that's really not that early. Right. Also when he was stuck in behind the leader and he tipped out to get clear, she took off. I don't necessarily think he asked her. I think she took off, and instead of grabbing her, he then just went on with it. Because what else are you going to do?
Grabbing would have been a problem at that point in the race.
Right. And then
I agree with you.
And then talking to Javier right after the race, and then we also saw Javier at dinner and got to talk to him a little bit more in depth. I mean, he was really happy with her, and he thought that she was very professional on the backside when he was in behind horses. She shut off. He said that he looked to his outside and saw that Julian, and I don't even remember who Julian was on, Julian had some horse, and he felt like if he didn't get out then, he was going to get stuck. And so when he put her in the clear is when she wanted to kind of take off a little bit. And look, like, you know, if Molotov gets stopped once, just once, she gets stopped, then Pass the Champagne wins. So
something was lost in translation there, clearly, as Julian did not have a horse in the race, but
he didn't. I thought he said Julian. Maybe, yeah. Maybe it wasn't Julian. Maybe it was
John. Will Secret aboard McCourt? No, he would have been too far back. I don't know. But whatever the case, I think you made a great point. And I felt like anyway, when I watched again, my first thought as they run by and then they hit the wire was, ooh, did he move a little too soon? But watching it again, I feel like it was a series of events. Having to get position going forward after the tardy break, ending up in the littlest bit of a jackpot, having that great opportunity to extricate. You know, I can't complain. I think it would be churlish to complain about the ride, honestly. I just, you know, I do worry. Malathot, I think there's more to come from her as well. So quick overview of the odds right now. Actually, Travel Column listed at this moment as the 3-1 favorite over Malathot at 4. I would have probably had that the other way around personally. Crazy Beautiful, 9-2. Search Results, who will be the next horse and race we talk about, 7-1. Clairiere, 8-1. I still think she's pretty darn interesting. A few others in between, and you get back to Pass the Champagne at 16-1. That might offer a little bit of value in my opinion as well at this stage. I like your reckoning of maybe a higher double-digit odd for her. Any other thoughts on those odds, or should we move our way to New York?
Oh, we could head to New York.
So Search Results wins a race that, to me, on paper, it was hard to see anything else happening. She was geared down in the end. Search Results figure more along the lines of the figures that this division has been running. One of the things that was a little more impressive for me on the, I don't have the buyers in front of me, host fail, but the Malathot and Pass the Champagne had numbers on the buyer scale that started to look like horses that were ready to hit the Kentucky Oaks trail. Looking at Timeform US has it a little tighter. Had Malathot finishing up, had them both on speed figures, finishing up with a 107 Malathot and Pass the Champagne. Meanwhile, Search Results actually had the 107 speed number upgraded, I guess, for being near the pace, though that surprises me. That's an upgrade because it was such a slow pace. But anyway, comes out a 110 on Timeform. These are all still a little bit low. I'll dig for those buyers. Give me your overall thoughts on Search Results performance. And what you think of her coming out of here, is she, off that performance in the Gazelle, a main contender for you for the Kentucky Oaks?
Yeah, I mean, she can absolutely win. She's talented. She's undefeated. She's, you know, she's trained by a future Hall of Famer in Chad Brown. She's ridden by a future Hall of Famer in Irad. She was a little bit goofy. And it's funny, actually, Javier had mentioned when Jacob just asked him if he was going to be available or if he was getting back on Search Results for the Oaks. And it sounded like Javier, because Irad won on Search Results, Irad would probably stay on Search Results. But Javier had said that he felt like Search Results was still learning. The times that, that he rode her, he felt like she was still learning. And so she's probably got some upside there, an opportunity to continue to improve. And even the way she ran, if I remember correctly, she was switching leads late.
Yes.
In the stretch. And so she'll continue to improve, and there's nothing wrong with an undefeated filly.
Yeah, Bayer had Search Results at 92. I'm still digging for the result of the race at
I think it was 89. Keeneland.
89? Okay, so there you go. So
but I know two, you know, Sean Borman and other figure makers had it faster than that.
Okay, very interesting. I mean, it just doesn't – it feels like in terms of the figures, these horses are going to be very, very tightly grouped heading in. There was other Oaks prep action on the weekend, but honestly, I'm kind of ready to talk about the boys unless you had any thoughts about the three-year-old division further to share.
No, I'm ready when you are.
Let's do it. And let's start off – we're in New York. Let's stay in New York, and let's talk about the Wood Memorial, a race that it wasn't pretty. And it was very strangely run. The Timeform info reflects that. Actually, it didn't have the early fractions coded slow, which I thought it might. It was neutral early, but then had oddly, but not oddly, given the way the race, oddly visually, but not that oddly given what happened, the 6 furlong in the mile coded as fast. In the end, the pace collapsed, and it was Bourbonic getting the win at 72-1. the all Todd Pletcher exact, the 72-1 Bourbonic over 15-1 Dynamic One. Did you ever think we'd have these kind of, we'd have a $453 4-1 Todd Pletcher exacta in a major Triple Crown prep race, JK?
Yeah, that was wild. It's funny. I saw a video circulating the interwebs where Kendrick was coming into the room and he was boasting, saying, I told you I'm going to take it back, make one run. And that's exactly what he did. He took Bourbonic back, made one run. You know, big year for Kendrick, you know, getting his first grade one, now winning a Kentucky Derby prep like the Wood Memorial. It's only a grade two, but man, it sure feels like a grade two plus. Grade two on paper, grade one in your heart type of race. So, yeah, you know, look, I think that it's no offense to the nine animals that lined up in that race, but I don't have any interest in betting any of them moving forward. But you know, on its own right, it was an interesting race.
It didn't look pretty. It really just had that look of form that's probably not going to mean a whole lot when we come down to the Kentucky Derby. I have no horses. I can tell you stories about coming out of that one. I just the subplot to me that I thought was funny that I just made up in my head was Kendrick after the race potentially talking a little bit of trash in the jockey's room to Cancel after the tough beat at the end of the riding title there to have gotten the better of Cancel and Chad Brown and Crowded Trade in that spot. He probably felt like he was on top of the world again. But yeah, I agree. It seemed like a pace collapse. The horse, I mean, Dynamic One made a pretty nice move to get into contention. But at the end of the day, these figures are just, they're not quite enough to get me excited. Time Form took a dimmer view than Buyer. 104 on Time Form for that one. The Buyer figure came back okay. Once again here, struggling. I got to start taking notes before these shows. 89. So Buyer took a much more favorable view of the race. My inclination seems like your inclination, probably not one that we need maybe in the future or whatever, but for the next race being the Kentucky Derby, probably not one we have to worry about all that much. But boy, Todd Pletcher's sure going to have a lot of starters in this race, isn't he?
Yeah, it's funny. You know, Brad Cox and Chad Brown, you know, thrust themselves into the scene as these top trainers, and it seems that people forgot a little bit about Todd, and he reminded you winning the title this year and then also at Saratoga, and then also you know, getting what it feels like he's got like seven in the Derby again, back to his old antics.
No doubt about it. We had fun on Saturday at Keeneland, hanging out in the Bluegrass Room. My favorite part of the day had nothing to do with racing, JK, and I haven't told you this part yet, but I think it could provide a potential new feature for the show. When we were talking to a friend of ours, she'll go nameless to protect the innocent, and strangely enough, she somehow thought that you would be an appropriate person to ask for advice in texting some fella who'd been in the picture, and you very enthusiastically were giving her advice of how to respond to texts. I think it was some ambiguous text, and you were very excited to show her, oh, when you don't know what's going on like that, just send back a bunch of emojis. I thought it was good advice, actually, and it gave me the idea, stealing from the old school fantasy focused baseball podcast back when it was Matthew Berry in the chair. How about we debut a little JK's dating advice corner on the podcast going forward? Are you up for that?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Trust me. I know the game well. Not really. Not really. But it's always fun. A little strategy here and there.
Did you get the lowdown? Was it effective? Did it get the desired result? Were you kept in the loop the whole time?
No, I don't know. I don't know what happened there. I don't know. I'll look into it, though, and report back.
We'll have to find out. Perhaps she can be the first guest on JK's Dating Advice Corner, fully acknowledging the complete and utter ripoff of Matthew Berry on that one. Racing at Keeneland was great, though. Just to be there was great. I mean, I do think it's worth pausing a moment for how nice it was. I mean, obviously, we were there. There were certainly people there for the Breeders' Cup. But, you know, the vibes were not nearly, for me anyway, as positive, as relaxed. Especially having been able to get the second shot before heading out there to Keeneland, it was just so great to have this like speck of normalcy. And I was It felt like turning the corner in some way, shape, or form. Before we get to the racing, how good did it feel for you to be back there in the green room, back hanging out at Keeneland?
Oh, it was awesome just to be back at Keeneland in general and to see people and to you know, I like the fist bump tradition. You know, I'm okay with that being one thing that sticks around from COVID. I've always the shaking of the hand thing is always a little bit, you know, especially people that like you don't know. It's just like kind of gross to a certain extent. So I'm good, you know, but it's just still nice to see people and to be able to to be able to hug someone or whatever. It's just it was nice. It was nice to be back, and it kind of reminded me of the whole, well, it didn't remind me, but it made me think of the possibility that we'll be able to kind of have some normalcy this summer at Saratoga as well, as long as things keep kind of going in the right direction. So it was really great to be back.
Fingers crossed on that. You've already tipped your hand that you were impressed with Essential Qualities run at Keeneland. This effort, very tough, such an exciting horse race, highly motivated, gave him everything he could handle. He still prevailed a neck, gets a 118 on time form, and I think it was a very similar number, a 97 on Buyer for Essential Quality. You sound like you are sold on the Son of Tappet as your Derby horse.
Yeah, you know, I typically try to wait until the 9 furlong preps before I start falling in love and making decisions. You know, we obviously have to see what happens with Concert Tour, but I'm not really sure Concert Tour is going to do anything to get me off Essential Quality. He's really shown to be a gritty champion. He came back as a 3-year-old, won on a sloppy surface off of a layoff. He's undefeated. Listening to Brad Cox, he thinks he's going to get better as the distances get longer. So he's already pretty darn good right now at the mile and an eighth. And if he's going to get better at the mile and a quarter, I think they're going to have a hard time beating him if he gets a good trip.
He's a very tough horse. He's a very cool horse. As for Highly Motivated, I almost had the opposite impression of what you were saying about Essential Quality, where it felt like rather than get better going longer, he felt like maybe he was just a little bit stretched at the mile and an eighth. I'll leave this to, you know, Matt Bernier to talk about as somebody who knows more and pays more attention to lead changes in and out than I ever do. But it did look like he flipped back to the wrong lead late. I saw somebody suggesting that meant maybe he would have won if he didn't. I just don't look at the world that way. I look at the world as he was tired. You know, that's how I view lead changes. I always think about it as like carrying that heavy shopping bag in one arm or another down the street. And when you get tired, you know, you start off and you're doing it nice and you do two nice blocks in the left and two nice blocks in the right. By that, you know, 20th block where you're getting back from the Whole Foods to home, I'm switching 3 times a block because I'm getting tired. I think that's kind of what it's like for horses with lead changes. When they get tired, they start flipping around a lot. I just wonder if he doesn't want to go shorter. I wonder if he'll even be pointed to the Derby. I haven't looked at the news story on that. I'd certainly, if Chad Brown tells me he thinks he's going to get better going farther, you know, I'll reevaluate my own opinion. But my first gut seeing it was maybe that's as far as he wants to go. What did you think of Highly Motivated? How would you help plot his campaign?
Yeah, I mean, he ran so well against the horse, I think, to win the Kentucky Derby. So I don't want to get too carried away with trying to cut him back. But I do think that he feels a lot like Practical Joke, right? Practical Joke was talented enough to get himself in the mix in these mile and an eighth, mile and a 16th races. But when they finally cut him back, you know, he won the Alan Jerkins, and Highly Motivated feels like that type to me, if that's where the route that they end up deciding to go. But I think he's earned the right to run in the Derby. The other thing is that when it comes to Chad and when it comes to Seth Klarman, they don't strike me as we qualified, we have to run types. That's just not how they feel to me. So we'll know if he shows up. I think he shows up because he deserves to be there and he should be there. And if he skips it, I think that they're doing right by the horse, and that's the answer to the question. He doesn't want to go that far.
Makes sense. Practical Joke ran a blinder in the Bluegrass, ran a big figure, ended up second to IRAP, went on to the Kentucky Derby where he didn't really have an excuse. And at that point, I think they realized, hey, let's cut back. But I mean, Derby is once in a lifetime. You certainly wouldn't blame anybody. If you're remotely on the fence, you go to the Derby and you see what the horse tells you, and maybe the horse is better. Horse is so progressive. Wouldn't surprise me if the horse did better, but that was just my little, you know, 2 cents armchair of what I think eventually he's going to be better. I mean, there was so much other good racing at Keeneland, but let's stick with the three-year-olds, JK, and then if we have a minute towards the end here, we can come back and maybe talk about some of the other good racing at Keeneland, Wesley Ward going out of his mind, etc. But let's move out west to a horse that really impressed me. So I've been skeptical, let's just say it, about Rock Your World, to the point where I have several times gone on to look at the international future figures for what horses were being bet and was like shocked by the fact that Rock Your World was listed along the lines of, I can't remember exactly what he was, but I was noticing him. So he was clearly less than 20-1 at one point. And I wouldn't even mention him because I was like, this is a turf horse, isn't it? What are we even talking about? But Rock Your World goes out there, runs a 100 buyer speed figure, does so in impressive fashion. I thought it was very good-looking run. Quick to the half mile, coated red on time form. Ends up drawing off. Medina Spirit is no mug. I mean, it's a decent horse that he beat by 4 1/4 lengths. I'm super interested in Rock Your World coming out of this, as that was the first dirt start. Maybe it's one of these situations where the horse improved. I talk about this all the time on turf, that you see that first-time turf figure, and a lot of people think they're going to regress when it improves a lot, first-time turf, and then they just get better and better. Could Rock Your World be the opposite dirt example of that, a horse that improved his figure 20 points getting first time on the dirt? I also like the fact that this is a horse who's sat and passed horses. This is not some one-way speed type. You say all the time on the shows that you don't like to get too wedded to a Derby horse before this time of year because you want to see them go a mile and an eighth first. So I don't feel like it's some, you know, apostasy for me to start talking about this horse I didn't consider before as a major Derby contender. That's what I think this Rock Your World is coming out of this. Clearly, from what you said before, you weren't as impressed as I was. On the whole, what did you think of this year's Santa Anita Derby?
Yeah. You know, he did. He ran well. And you know, look, he started off on the turf twice. That's not his fault, right? I mean, like, that's not an indicator of his ability to run on the dirt. That's just where he ran was on the turf. And his first race on the dirt, like you said, he beat a good horse in Medina Spirit. He did it the right way on the front end. He did it with a fast time. He did it with a good trainer. There's a lot of things that point him in the direction of being a viable horse for the Kentucky Derby. Now, do I think that he's going to wire in the mile and a quarter Derby and hold off horses? Well, first of all, you know, he'll wrestle the lead away from Concert Tour and then hold off horses like, you know, like Essential Quality. No, I don't think that's the case. But he does feel like the type of horse that runs third or runs second and like that you were going to forget about him. He is a horse that I think has deserved some inclusion. We'll see what he does if he goes there to train. If he stays in California, we'll have a better feel for how he's progressing. But he definitely didn't do anything to disgrace himself, and he's in the mix.
Yeah, he's an interesting horse, I think. What about Medina Spirit? I felt like this is funny, and you know, obviously have had Bob Baffert on JK Plus One. You've got the silver wig. You're more in tune with the barn than I am. But he said a post-race quote that really made me, like, doubt him for the Kentucky Derby, which was just a very simple quote. He just described Medina Spirit as an overachiever, which I thought was an interesting thing to say coming out of this race, where I felt like, you know, I felt like you could say, oh, he got still learning, developing horse, got everything we needed. He's an overachiever, made me think that maybe he just doesn't, you know, maybe Concert Tour really is the only Baffert hope at this point. You know, I'm not sticking to that necessarily, but that's where my brain lean right now. When we do our Derby draft, I will probably not get Medina Spirit, though if everybody feels that way and the round is right, certainly I'd take a shot. It's not like the horse has no chance, and I've liked him. I liked him going in, and he didn't do anything but get beat by a horse I like. Curious to know, though, where at this point you stand with Medina Spirit. Serious Derby contender?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think that from the start, he was the third best Baffert, and I think he was third by a pretty big jump. You know, obviously he got the job done in the Robert Lewis, but I don't think he's the quality that you know that the other two were. And I think that's why Baffert probably is saying he's an overachiever. He's just not as good as his performances might seem. And I think a lot of that comes from the grit and the effort that he showed, you know. No, I don't need him.
Probably one you might leave on the sidelines. Dream Shake, who I was interested in, looked to have a pretty good trip and just lacked punch in the lane. This horse has experienced, he's done a lot in his three starts. I would imagine they're going to look for, I don't even know if he'd be able to get, would he be able to get in based on the Derby points he has? Yeah, I think they said
they're on the border, I'm pretty sure. And I think that, you know, unfortunately, we know what happens in the 4 weeks leading up to the Derby is there's always something, you know.
The combination of Derby fever and other horses defecting could get him into the field. My gut on him is I think it would be in – maybe I'm wrong. I'm not trying to tell anybody what to do with their horse. I'm not going to get mad if they go on with it. But my gut on him is – best thing to happen to him might be to not get into the Derby and let this one develop a little bit. I still think he could be a really nice – I mean, he is a really nice horse, and I think there could be more to come from him. But I'm not too interested in him in 4 weeks' time.
Is Panadol coming?
I don't know what Godolphin is going to do. Is Panadol in?
He's 16th. Yeah, I mean, I would think he's in.
So they've got Rebel's Romance and they've got Panadol. And we know it's been an unfulfilled dream for decades for Godolphin to win this race. So you'd think he'd come guns a-blazing.
They have essential quality, too. I mean, they could have three in the race.
That's right. Talk about a host fail. Yeah, they have these two long shots. I kind of forgot. They also have the promise
you. I can promise you essential quality we'll have on the blue cap.
No doubt about it. No doubt about it. Yeah, that's not a bad little
probably
hole.
Wear the white cap, and I think that if Panadol shows up, he'll have on the red cap.
I like it. We're gonna have quite a Todd Pletcher versus Godolphin go around here. Take a quick look at the Kentucky Derby market. Essential Quality finally taking his rightful place at the top of this anti-post market, where I felt like he could have been after last week, at least 7-2 there. Concert Tour 4-1. Rock Your World, I'm just going to say it, a short enough 13-2 off the big effort. Hot Rod Charlie in there at 10. Bourbonic a 14-1 that I'd lay. Greatest Honor a 14-1 where, well, I like him for underneath, I would probably lay. Known Agenda 16. Medina 16, Weyburn somehow 16. That might be one book. And then longer there. I'll mention Dynamic One since we talked about him before. 20-1. Stand out at you there?
Yeah, Known Agenda is interesting to me. I like him. I like him.
What's the obviously he's just gonna be training up from now. He's obviously seems to be developing. This is a tough year, man. I think this is going to be the last few years we've done the Derby draft. I feel like there's been, you know, a pretty clear first round. And I guess the one and two picks are pretty much etched in stone unless somebody wants to be a wise guy. But I feel like it gets really interesting with that group of horses in behind.
No, I mean, you know, the top of the market, like you said, Concert Tour, Essential Quality. You know, I think that if Concert Tour wins next weekend, those two will be fighting for favoritism. I think Essential Quality will get it. And then we'll try to see what's going to happen with the rest of them. I think Known Agenda will take money. The Florida Derby winner will take money, you know, it's especially trained by Todd and I'm assuming ridden by Irad. Yeah, I would think so. So, you know, I think that horse will take money as well.
It's going to be interesting to see some of the jockey musical chairs and how everything shakes out. I'm not going to be able to do it because we are going to do so much analysis between now and Derby week that as much as I want to try to wait till the draw to get my final opinion, I'm sure it's going to be very hard to fight against the current and do that. But I think it would really be a smart thing if you're, you know, if you're somebody who can listen to our analysis, read what we have on the blog, read what we have on Plus, but not, you know, more than most years, I kind of feel like race design could really affect who's going to win this year's Derby. I mean, a horse, just depending on a horse like Rock Your World, you know, I feel like an outside draw would really be nice for him. And I'd lose interest in if he's drawn in the first like three or four. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, no, I mean, you don't want him inside being pressured. You want him getting that, you know, he's the type of horse that if you liked him, you wouldn't be mad if he drew the 20.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. You mentioned you're sort of warming to Known Agenda off that big run in the Florida Derby. Obviously, it feels like of the Pletchers, that's the one that you want coming out of this. What do you think we're going to see from him? I mean, you're envisioning another forward move in the right hands with the right pedigree kind of thing. What I want to hear a little bit more about why you like Known Agenda.
Yeah, I mean, I like the way he settled easily last time. He's ridden by Irad. He's trained by Todd. He seemed to be improving. He showed a bunch of talent. I just liked, and he's fast, you know, speed figure is fast. So he feels like the type of horse that's going to continue to improve. Curling, Mama Could Run. If you're looking for alternatives outside of, you know, I've already kind of shown my hand, it's going to take something pretty strong from Concert Tour or something pretty, moving in the mornings leading up to the Derby. But Essential Quality is feeling like he's going to be my main kind of build around type of situation.
It is interesting to me in a funny way to think about the success of those Pletchers in New York. And we know neither one of us thought it was the strongest race in the world, but it is interesting that they're clearly B and C team. In a weird way, I consider it like a little bit of a form boost for a horse like Known Agenda, who has shown in the afternoon, and you can just sort of tell from the vibes around the connections, is the one that's the one in the barn. If they were to only take one, I think it's a little bit of an interesting, like subtle way to upgrade Known Agenda just a little bit. It might be as much of a takeaway from the wood as I have. We're basically talked through the Colts and the Phillies. I've got one thing we need to talk about, which is I want to tell folks about the Horse Player Happy Hour Tour who didn't get a chance to listen to our broadcast last week. Maybe we'll do that now, and then we'll just button up with a few random thoughts you might have of any horse you want to highlight who you saw run this weekend in any of the big races. But Horse Player Happy Hour Tour, we kick off on Thursday, $20 to play. We won't go through all the rules here because you can listen to a whole podcast we did about that, or you can watch the video over on YouTube. We launched it last week. We had JK in the car for a minute there until his battery died. It was a good appearance, though. This week, you're going to be traveling. It'll be Matt Bernier and I behind the controls. We're going to do the whole contest. I'm sure we'll recap the rules on there, but basically, this is going to be a first of its kind where it's a interconnected series of contests, cheap to play, the money's going to charity, and now you've got not just one way to win your way into the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge when you play in our Horse Player Happy Hour events, the traditional way by feeding, but you've got a chance to qualify for our playoffs, and you've got a chance to win the tour overall. JK, you were one of the architects of this thing. I know you're excited about it. You'll be joining us for these broadcasts when you can, but what do you think about this horse players should be paying attention to?
Yeah, I mean, I like the fact that it's connected. You know, it gives us something to talk about during those Horse Player Happy Hours. And then also, I like the fact that it's a positive expectation. It's a low dollar amount, $20 to play in these contests. Essentially, you can use eight of your scores throughout the spring and summer. So you really could get a BCBC seat for essentially what's the math on that? $160 bucks. And so I like that because, you know, the the NHC Tour that I won, I spent a lot of money trying to win that. You know, it's hard. You have to spend money in order to do that. This situation, I think, is a little bit easier. You can do it from the comfort of your home because there's no live, you know, events. You just play and participate. So, and there's two, like you said, there's two ways to win. If you're the outright tour winner with the most points accumulated in those eight scores, BCBC seat. Or if you finish first or second in the exacta in any of the events, you qualify for the playoffs, and the winner of the playoffs gets a BCBC seat. So there's a couple of ways to win, and all you got to do is just participate.
You highlighted something that I should have done. It's free. The games cost $20 to play, the same as they would, but there's no tour fee. So how are we funding this? We're giving you the seats. Well, you know, in partnership with our friends at the Breeders' Cup, the two Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge seats that will be won through the playoffs and on the tour, that's just added to the pot. Get a chance to get involved. It starts on Thursday, probably around 3 o'clock. More details to come on that. Got to loop in with Peter Jr. and Matt and see when we're all around and when the right races are. But it should be an absolute ton of fun. We really encourage you to participate. Even if you're just putting in your entries off of morning lines or playing all the fours, it makes sense to participate every week. Though I hope someone who wins the tour doesn't have a score that's from all the fours. But we'll see how that goes. Let's look back to, actually, I lied. One more Triple Crown question for you, JK. Did you see anybody running this weekend? It could be a horse we've talked about or a horse that we didn't touch on yet. I've got one in mind who might be an interesting horse at a price, maybe to work in underneath or just throw in somewhere. But any non-obvious horses out of these three-year-old races? And I can go with mine first if you don't have one ready.
Look, Dynamic One, I mean, I think is interesting. They've always liked the horse, and maybe he's figuring it out. He's trained by Todd, and maybe, you know, maybe a horse like that.
He did attack the fastest part of the race. You know what I mean? Like, I can make you the case that he ran the best, for sure.
Yeah, no, I mean, he could. That one definitely makes sense to me.
I like that one. Mine is more for underneath, if he even goes. Maybe you have some insight onto this. We talked about Essential Quality and Highly Motivated and how good they were. Five lengths behind them was Rombauer, a horse that I know you and I have both always liked. Is Rombauer the kind of horse that could just keep staying on and round out your Derby superfecta potentially?
Yeah, no, I mean, and Michael McCarthy even expressed that he feels like the distance is not going to be a problem for him at all. He'll keep running. So, because if you think about it, if you look at the Bluegrass, he looked in trouble on the turn. He looked like he was going to lose position and fall out the back. And he kept coming and got third.
Not a bad effort at all. Definitely a horse. Those are two I think I'm interested in that are going to be 20, 30 to one come the day. How about in general the racing, JK, on Saturday? Was there a horse or a race or a situation you wanted to discuss?
You know, look, I didn't really like Kamari, just because her three dirt races were 4.5 Wesley Ward, you know, 2-year-old race, and then two slop races, and they bet her like she couldn't lose. And I don't think they were right. I think she could have lost, but she didn't. She won. So maybe they were right, but I don't think they were. You know that she ran well, but I think on Sunday we saw a horse that will put her in her place come the Humana Vista.
There's that silver wig. That silver wig.
She's good, man. She's so
Gamine. We're talking about her for those that
she's,
don't know.
She's really good, and obviously it was a paid workout. We all know that, but just the way she did it, she's just so classy, you know. And she's just going to continue to get better. She's going to continue to get better.
It's going to be a fun showdown. I'll say this. So when, you know, the Wesley Ward 2-year-olds didn't fire on the Friday, but all of his older horses ran, if you do ability figures, they all ran to the max of or in excess of their ability figures. The Ward older horses were all running out of their skin. How much do you consider that a negative when they run back at a time when the barn is just in regular form? Is that part of the reason why you're so confident that Gamine would handle Kamari?
No, I think Kamari's really good, but I think Gamine is like that next level of good. And here's the thing is, you know, I don't remember the exact number. I think it was like I think it was like 1.8 million. Is that how much she was? I don't have it in
something
front of
like
me.
That. It was a big expensive number. Something like that.
Yeah, and I could probably do that thing where I just kind of talk in circles for a couple seconds and I'll have
Stallify.
It for you.
Stallify. We have a name for it now. You're Stallify.
Yeah, she was 1.8 million. Yeah. When you get a filly like that who is so well bred and to sell for that much money, you got to be a good mover. You got to look good. You got to check all the boxes. And then you have a Hall of Fame trainer who has found her niche, which is one turn dirt sprints. She's just hard to beat and she's going to continue to be hard to beat. And we're very fortunate to see that 3-4 situation with her. I think she's going to have a heck of a year. And to be honest with you, I'd love for her to run off the screen.
It's hard to argue with that, really.
And the humanity staff.
Can stay healthy.
And then show up for the Met Mile.
We'll see how the campaign unfolds and what happens there. Let's talk about the Shakertown just for a minute. Bound for Nowhere gets after that weird break, gets a perfect trip, fast pace early, sets it up for this one to come back to the glory days. You mentioned all the wards running out of their skin. This one, no exception. Imprimis, tough luck, tough luck. Second, not only did he break through the gate, but then apparently bled during the race, causing trainer Joe Orsino to make some very frank comments about his feelings about Lasix not being allowed in these stakes races, which I thought was at least a little bit ironic for a horse who they had willingly run off Lasix at Royal Ascot a couple of years ago. If there was a horse I was worried about bleeding, it wouldn't have been Imprimis. All that said, I'll just say, look, I understand the points on the other side, but for horse players dealing with 1,000 other variables, it is a little frustrating, to say the least, to have this extra variable of worrying about the Lasix in these races. I mean, maybe at some point so many horses will have so much form off of Lasix that we don't have to worry about it as much, but I was a little frustrated by it and it contributed to my feeling of Imprimis being a little bit unlucky there. What's your thought on this Lasix issue, JK, as a horse player?
Yeah, I think that on this show we've probably steered pretty clear of the Lasix thing just for a couple of reasons. One is because I am not a vet and I'm not a horseman, and so I don't want to act like an expert about something that I'm not an expert about. I listen to horsemen. I understand the basic science of what Lasix is, and I understand the kind of semi-ridiculous way that we are eliminating it to appease an audience that's never going to be appeased. So I obviously lean more towards the Lasix camp. And I also understand where Joe's coming from. It's like, this horse has run for 7 years. Well, obviously not that long because he didn't run when he was one, but he's run for 5+ years with the ability to have Lasix to prevent him from having pulmonary hemorrhaging. And then he didn't. And the perception of seeing a horse come back with nose blood coming out of their nose is not a good, it's not a good look either. And so some will say, well, then we have to eliminate the horses in the breed that do bleed. And that's what they do in other countries. And that's fine. But I understand his frustration. I can tell you right now, when I know a lot of these trainers look at these horses like they're kids, I black out and see red if I feel like my son has been hurt or whatever. Like I've mentally pictured myself like pushing down a toddler that when he pushed Austin down at the park. You know what I'm saying? Like, so I understand being upset when he sees his horse bleeding out of his nose and knowing that it didn't have to happen.
Yeah, we could do much longer on this. I think we're both very much in agreement that in the real world, the cost benefit analysis, I'm not sure they're heading in the right direction with this. But
and I'm okay with like the 2-year-old thing that they've done. If I can deal with that. You've never let them have it, so we find out very quickly if they can or cannot handle it. Whatever. Okay.
That's more the way to do it. I agree from a horse player point of view, if you're going to do it, but this, what we already are guessing about 8 million different things and to have to guess about this other one, it can be frustrating. It can be very frustrating. Hopefully Imprimis gets back to his top form. Hopefully there's other benefits that are going to occur You know, horses being able to run more frequently, et cetera. There are some potential positive ripple effects to come from all this. But just from a horse player point of view, it does make you say, okay, here's one more thing we got to worry about. Hopefully there's going to be more clashes between Bound for Nowhere and Imprimis down the line. These are two very good horses. And I wanted to mention it. We had to touch on that storyline if we were going to talk about the race, but I really want to talk about the race just because I thought along with essential quality and highly motivated throwing down in the stretch, they were just proper horse races. And it was so great to be there at Keeneland with a crowd. We're just about out of time, JK. Any closing thoughts for the listeners on this early week show?
Grade one gamble. Obviously we want to remind people that contest is this weekend and you can play online. Reach out to Jim Goodman. He's easy to find on Twitter, Keeneland Jim, I believe. What else? That's about all I can think of.
That was a good remember, actually, JK, because I did have our ad for Keeneland at the beginning of the show, but I wanted to plug that specifically. Information, I can make it real easy for you. InTheMoneyPodcast.com/Keeneland. That'll get you all the info about the grade one gamble. You can reach out to Jim directly. Certain ADWs have cutoffs if you want to play online. I think Jim has a waiting list at this point if you want to play in person, but don't leave this to the last minute. Make sure you get on it, and Godspeed to everybody competing. Will you be among them, or will you be too distracted?
Oh, no, I'll be in the mix. I'll be on TV, but I'll be playing.
All right, good stuff. Godspeed to you, JK, and everybody playing in the Grade 1 Gamble. This is one of the major contests of the year. Check it out, inthemoneypodcast.com/Keeneland. Thank you one more time, JK. We'll thank Kim Weir for that exciting news at the beginning of the show. Remind folks to put in their order for this year's whiskey. We're accepting donations to TRF now, and we'll send that out as a gift. TRFinc.org/players for that one. Who else do I want to thank? We kind of already thanked the TRF. How about our friends over at 10 Strike Racing? Always good to root for the guys in purple and black. And as part of Plus this weekend, we're going to have Clay Sanders. Last time he was on the Plus airwaves, he gave out a very nice paying pick five. He'll be back to do the same on Arkansas Derby Day. More information about that in themoneypodcast.com/plus. Thanks to all the new subscribers. We had a huge array of people signing up last weekend. We appreciate that. Most of all, though, we appreciate all of you, the listeners, the viewers, for making these shows so much fun to do. Reach out to us if you have a question. He's at UT Big Hair. I'm at Looms Boldly, or there's always the contact section over at InTheMoneyPodcast.com. This show's been a production of In The Money Media. Our business manager is Drew Coatney. Our chief creative officer is Jonathan Kinchin. I'm Peter Thomas Fornital. May you win all your photos.